I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It's Wednesday, so it's time for the Front Three with me, Adam Bowood, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
That's me.
And Dave O'Brien.
That's me.
It is indeed. What a night, guys, in the Premier League. 23 goals, 2 red cards, 1 hat trick. And one thriller at Anfield, Lawrence. The art of defending may be absent in the game, but very entertaining 3-3 draw nonetheless.
Yeah, I still feel like entertaining is slightly... I appreciate good defending, and I'm entertained by it. So I find it less entertaining when Liverpool go 1-0 up and then let Arsenal back in the game, and then they go 2-1 up and then they let Arsenal back in the game.
What about to the neutral, though? Goals.
Yeah, but the neutral... Does the neutral only appreciate goals? The neutral's not an idiot.
No, but the neutral appreciates goals more.
Why?
Because that's what football's about, mate. What's better, a 0-0, art of defending masterclass, or balls to the wall, no one can defend it, it's all over the shop.
Mate, it's about the 3-0. It's about the 0-0, mate.
It is all about the nil-nil. And people are saying, Klopp is a genius 1 minute and then Klopp's an idiot the next. I don't like the way it swings between the two. Liverpool, I mean, Klopp has said, you've got until the end of the season to impress me. If you don't impress, then you're out. Well, I think that's fair enough.
Who did impress then for Liverpool then? Firmino obviously gets 2
impressed.
Goals.
Firmino, the first goal for Liverpool was poor defending, or maybe unfortunate positioning for Arsenal, but then good positioning for Liverpool. I think overall Liverpool's pressing was very effective in the first half, but Arsenal managed to come back from that. I don't think it was a particularly good performance by Arsenal. I don't know if either of you thought it was particularly good, but I wasn't really very impressed by... I was impressed by the sort of quick play at times, but I wasn't really that impressed by the way that Arsenal put themselves about or managed to compete with Liverpool in any way. Because I don't think it was a particularly... I just wasn't all that impressed, even though it was a 3-3 draw, to be honest.
Strange. It was like Mesut Ozil didn't really... that one moment of brilliant skill where he brought the ball down, but he was very anonymous in the game. I thought there was moments where Arsenal... could have broke very much like Manchester United and scored, a number of goals on the counter-attack.
Firmino hit the bar, you know that?
That was a cracking effort, that, wasn't it? That spin.
Yeah. The goal is it's Ronaldinho-esque. the space he's in.
Backlift, yeah.
Yeah. Backlift, Dave. What a lovely word to... Backlift describes that one perfectly, isn't it?
Yeah. I worry about him taking his shirt off. I'd have gone fucking ape shit at him at half time. But for that,
but they just didn't take their chances, and I think that could potentially cost Arsenal in a title race if they're not, they're not taking the chances. There was a moment where Olivier Giroud should have scored in the first half. Whether it was the first half, the ball went across. Mm. Like, fair enough, Giroud scored twice.
Was that the comical one where he kicked it out of the goal almost?
All he had to do was let it hit him.
He made up for it with a fantastic finish later on, but.
But you've got to, this is the thing, I think, to win the league, you've got to have this winning mentality, and nobody's showing that. Like, the cutthroat Ferguson years of, they'd always score the goals when they needed to. Man United yesterday didn't do that, Liverpool today didn't do that, Arsenal didn't do that. It's one of those things where it's just, who's going to win this league? Is anyone going to win the league?
Imagine if this season they do it so no one wins the league.
I mean,
yeah, is it a draw?
It's never been done before. It could happen.
You can't win the league this season. I mean, Leicester, I don't know how much. I mean, Arsenal were clearly, their defending was reasonable at times. It really wasn't fantastic football from either side tonight. So I can't say I was particularly impressed.
Joel Campbell.
Yeah, I think Joel Campbell and Olivier Giroud were the two more impressive players in the game.
Monreal, I thought, was really good. Like, read the play excellently. We were covered back.
It's nice that Joe Allen could get himself a memory while he's at the club. And obviously, Liverpool have spoken this week a lot about goalkeepers and loanees. Obviously, Liverpool calling a lot of people back from loan, getting Corker in on loan, and then calling back Ward from his loan, who is allegedly going to be the goalkeeper that will challenge Mignolet for the number one spot. And looking at it right now, doesn't look like he's going to have to challenge all that much to be able to do that.
You think Liverpool are going to be happier with that result then, Lawrence?
I'm not happy with it because I think they let a match where they could have bossed it much more slip.
Leicester though, Dave, winning unfortunately against Spurs 7 minutes from time, a Robert Huth header. It was a tight game. Kind of wish Harry Kane would have put away that golden chance earlier, but Kasper Schmeichel did make an amazing save. But in a game where maybe it was expected Spurs would sort of set out their title credentials, their top four credentials, it was actually Leicester who ended up doing so, now level at the top of the table with Arsenal. Good night for Leicester, Dave.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both their two flyers, Jamie Vardy and Mahrez, probably didn't have the best of games between them, created zero chances, only two shots on goal between them. You're expecting them to be more involved in the game, that you'd say, but the performance levels before this game tonight have been too exceptionally high, so you're expecting it to drop a little bit. But Spurs, it's an interesting one. Spurs are so close to being that team to challenge for the league, but they just seem to come, the banana skins. Maybe it's a mentality thing, Lawrence. What do you reckon?
Oh, here we go.
Adam, why do you think Spurs let it slip tonight? Do you even think they let it slip?
It was a tight game. It could have gone either way. It just feels like this is what I've sort of been talking about for a while now, where...
Mentality.
Not mentality. Mentality. I think it's more tangible than that, personally. Because I think if there was a mentality problem, I think that's something that Pochettino has helped to eradicate away. I don't necessarily think it's mentality, but I think the squad we've got is not big enough. And I think we're starting now to show a little bit of fatigue. Because the way Pochettino plays, the way Spurs play every game, they are... if not the top team, then certainly the top two or three, distance covered every game. I think around this time, the same thing happened last season after the new year. It started to show a little bit that perhaps we didn't quite have the strength and depth to cope with that. I think you see that when you've got Harry Kane, who's played pretty much every minute of the Premier League for us so far this season, when you're relying on him every single game to be running everywhere across the pitch, it will affect us. And I think that's why I never thought Spurs would be serious title contenders, because this sort of thing is going to happen. We will drop points to these sort of teams, usually at home, unfortunately. But I think, we've got a couple of games coming up now, important games. I think we've got Palace away next, yep, potentially. The likes of Watford, the likes of Norwich, I believe. So we need to start winning these sort of games if we can. Then maybe, put us back in that title conversation. But I just don't buy it, because results like this will come around every, 4 or 5 games. At the same time, we've only lost 3 games all season. But I think, as we've said before, Spurs don't have that cutting edge. We've drawn way too many games. And I think that's the difference between us and, say, Arsenal or even Leicester this season.
The fact is, guys, that puts Leicester joint top of the table, just below Arsenal.
Incredible.
Minus 3 down on them. Obviously, Leicester are plus 13 goal difference.
So they're the team who really made a statement tonight.
I guess so. But I don't know what statement they're still trying to make, because I still think, people say, the difference between them and Arsenal is Arsenal have people who would be considered to be the kind of people who would go on to win the title because of their experience.
Of course, but Leicester had gone, 5 hours without scoring a goal in the league. They'd lost one. They'd drawn 2 in a row. People were sort of talking of their demise. To go to a team who are 100% top four contenders,
yeah,
touted as title contenders, and to win is a big achievement.
So it's to challenge your perception this season, because just when we thought it was safe to come out, Jermaine Defoe went and scored a hat-trick for Sunderland, and Leicester are 8 points clear of West Ham. Not only that, they're 12 points clear of Liverpool, and in the last 18 games, if either of those teams want to get into the top four, that means they're going to need a minimum. I think West Ham need a minimum of a 1 point swing, but Liverpool need a minimum of a 5 point swing.
I feel like no one is really able to put a run together of 4 or 5 games in a row, 4 or 5 victories in a row, that can sort of set you apart. I mean, at the moment, the informed team in the Premier League is West Ham. As you mentioned, they won 3 on the spin now. I'm sure maybe Dave will have something to say about that. But no one in the top 4, 5, 6 seems to be able to put any sort of run together that can bring them clear. I mean, we're talking about West Ham, they're only a point behind Spurs, who are these apparent title contenders. Spurs themselves are only 4 behind Man City, who again dropped points tonight against Everton. And they're only 3 points behind Arsenal and Leicester. No one seems to be able to break away in the Premier League at the moment. And whether that is down to the lack of defending, or, we've talked about the issues before, it makes for an entertaining league, but perhaps not a league with the most quality in it.
I still don't see what the entertaining argument is, but yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Man United especially, they can't put anything together at the moment.
But do you not think the Anfield game, it was a classic tonight, surely. Anfield, Liverpool v Arsenal, 3-0, the same last night, we'll come to this, Dave. Manchester United, Newcastle, brilliant, like, fantastically entertaining games, but perhaps not.
There was a lot of mistakes in the game, I think. Yeah, exactly, lacking real quality, lacking technical structure, lacking, I don't know, like lacking a manager to make a tactical change at the right sort of time. Bring on an extra defensive midfielder when Arsenal potentially were winning. They didn't make that move again because their squad doesn't have that at the moment due to injuries. But it's one of those things where it's ridiculous. I think especially with Man United, the decision making of some players in certain situations, the like sort of bipolar performances of Manchester United from yesterday was ridiculous. Ander Herrera had a wonderful first half, ran the show. Second half, it just looked like he'd run out of steam. It sort of felt like with a bit like Arsenal, they played very, very well. Joel Campbell went off and they sort of lost their edge. Theo Walcott kept on going on those runs, not playing the pass at the right time. And it just seems like there's no sort of, it's like basically you've caught a bear or something and it's dying and you're going to eat it for dinner. So you're in the woods, you're lost. Bear's in it on its absolute last legs.
Go on.
But you can't get it. It's just getting away from you. It keeps just getting away. It keeps like escaping and it's just frustrating. And eventually you're going to die.
You just watch that new Leonardo DiCaprio film by any chance?
I don't know.
No, okay, great. enjoy that one, Dave. I imagine that's one out there for all Manchester United fans.
Right, Dave, come on, let's talk a little bit about Manchester United. Obviously 3-0 last night at St. James's Park, 2-0 up, and contrived to throw it away. What did you make of the tactical approach to the game? Because I heard some people suggesting that maybe Paul Scholes' words had stung Louis van Gaal and he went a bit more gung-ho.
Well, no, it was more of that we let the opponents have the ball and create space in behind them by sitting a bit deeper. It was similar to the best performance of the season away at Everton. It was a similar 4-2-0, as you'd say, like the two strikers really getting in between the opposition centre-halves and midfield, really blocking that off. And it was really good. The low block worked so, so well. But again, Man United, 2-0 up, then 2-1. They should have been 3-1 up. Massive, massive chance they missed. And then obviously, 2-1 up. Then they should have been 3-1 up. Didn't take that chance. Newcastle equalised. Then they took the lead then. Wayne Rooney with a brilliant goal. Wayne Rooney was excellent yesterday. I think 2016 could be Wayne Rooney's year. It's really weird how it's already come. He's already been directly involved in more goals in 2016 than the whole of the rest of the campaign combined. So he could really kick on now. But then going back to the old game state, Man United take the 3-2 lead. They have so many chances on the break. Marouane Fellaini from 4 yards out with his head misses a brilliant opportunity. Jesse Lingard has the whole goal to aim at and misses. United should have been 5-2 up, a point in the game. And they went over, they ended up drawing the game. It's just, it's ridiculous. Players have got to take their chances, and if they can't take their chances, they're not good enough for Manchester United if Manchester United want to be in the top four. And that's where it's getting to now. It's not even talking about winning the league. It's about getting into the top four, because if you've got players like Jesse Lingard that, yes, they've been at United for a while, but they're just not good enough. They're not, Jesse Lingard's a player that's not developed physically enough. He doesn't really have an X factor. And when you've got someone like Memphis Depay on the bench, who is a wonderful talent, I just question why, you know, he's not playing every week. You know, Memphis isn't playing week in, week out, and play like Jesse Lingard and Marouane Fellaini still at United. It's just crazy. Mm. The recruitment of players over the last X amount of years has been stupid. Yesterday was even more frustrating than the nil-nils we've seen for me. The nil-nils, you can get them, okay? You know, the teams sit really deep away at Old Trafford. They defend, you know, with a big, deep block of 10 players. Fair enough. But that one was open. It was an open game, and we could have killed the game so many opportunities, and we didn't.
Only one win in their last 8 Premier League games, Manchester United, which is quite a stat. Only 2 points behind Spurs, though. So there you go. We've seen a lot of rumours now. Silly season is upon us, Dave. Manchester United need some signings, perhaps, to strengthen their hopes of reaching the top four. We've seen the likes of Felipe Anderson linked, but who's the one man you want to see them bring in January then to help bolster the squad?
I don't know. I think the really interesting thing there as well is if I was a chief exec or whatever you want to call it, Edward Wood is, and your team's playing awful and there's no creativity in the side. And like you're saying, before January, they'd, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So they've gone on a 6-game sort of where they haven't won. Why are you not, as soon as January the 1st comes round, why are you not saying, okay, well, we've bought this guy, and this guy, and they're here now, January the 1st. We're on the 13th of January and nothing's happened. It's just one of those things where United massively need a centre-back. I've said it like countless times in the summer, we need a centre-back. Daley Blind was so exposed against Newcastle. You know, we need a quality centre-back in there. We need a quality, ball-playing central midfielder. Bastian Schweinsteiger has come in and been all right, but the level of performance is still a little bit inconsistent. His injuries have come in, come out. I'd like to see, you know, at the moment, Ross Barkley's in brilliant form. If we can get Ross Barkley in that form, he'd be brilliant at United. I've already mentioned Mahrez, Mane, or, you know, maybe even Van Dijk from Southampton. He's come in and he's been brilliant. Why not just take a bit of a gamble there, pay a bit over the odds and get a centre-back that performed this season in the Premier League? And then, obviously, up front, Wayne Rooney's been sort of not hitting the back of the net, but then his form has started to turn. I think we need a right winger, whether that's Felipe Anderson, Mane, whoever.
You need a fair few
players. Does this team need this short-term low in order for the long-term build?
I think that there needs to be more foundations. I think that's a very good point, Lawrence. I think that potentially there needs to be a lull, but if you're not going to be signing players that around the age of Martial, around the age of Memphis, that can make these mistakes this season, like the Martial header back to the goalkeeper at Stoke that cost United the first goal. You know, let the players make the mistakes. I don't care about that, but get the young players into the club. I think that's the biggest thing.
I think
go out and buy John Stones.
We are partly. I mean. What I would say about Manchester United is they are the best marketer, the biggest, the best at doing this alongside Real Madrid. Has anyone else seen The Big Short, the new movie with Steve Carell and
Unfortunately not.
Oh, it's a good movie. It's about the financial collapse back in 2008 when everyone put their fingers in their ears and said, no, don't worry, nothing bad's going to happen. And everyone thought the good times would keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. What if Manchester United's business plan always requires good times? You keep making short-term business decisions which keep you in relatively good times, as opposed to taking the short-term pain so that the long-term is better for the club. And it seems if a lot of people have their fingers in their ears because they don't want to have to acknowledge it, because it would mean, you know, other fans get the better of you, or the banter coming your way is terrible, and you know that it was difficult to acknowledge at the club, blah blah blah. It's short if the short term going down.
I think you've just hit it on the nail on the head. That's what frustrates me the most, is that it looks so disorganised as a club. It looks like no one gives a flying F about what's going on, whether they're going to. You know, whether they are going to recruit someone that's going to be director of the academy, whether they are going to go out there and build a new, youth complex and really sort of move on as a football club, you know, invest in a ladies team. I think that's pathetic. Why have we not got a ladies team yet? It's a big thing. You see all the other clubs in the Premier League doing that because it's the right thing to do at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to just do. And it just feels like United are just a commercial powerhouse, and that's it. That's all they are right now. For me, that's their identity at the moment is that. Whereas the identity of Manchester United is developing young footballers and playing an attacking style and being close to the community and working with the community to progress the local area. And right now, it's a load of crap. Mm.
But it does seem a lot like a lot of people.
So frustrating.
It does seem like there are a lot of people who don't necessarily want to educate the population so they can continue to trade on that, basically.
I'm looking forward to the day when we have something positive to say about Manchester United, because as much as I love passionate Dave, I do love the passionate Dave going in on Manchester United. Oh, it's going to be good to see it.
I'm just upset.
I'm upset,
mate. I'm just upset about it.
Disappointed.
Let's talk a little bit about the other results then, briefly, in the Premier League, in these midweek fixtures. Chelsea dropping points again, 2-2 at home to West Brom.
Yeah.
Now, I believe, 14th. Still 14th in the table, 5 points above the relegation zone.
Yeah, they're not going to get relegated. The players are all looking around at each other as if to say, what the hell was that? I didn't watch the Chelsea game tonight, so I don't know how much I can comment on it, but it's not like they played one of the easier teams to play in the league tonight, or last night. You know, they're playing a side who have been very difficult to play for quite some time now, and that side got
3 points ahead of them as well,
and that side got a goal from James McLean at the end. So
big win day for Southampton, an important win against Watford, 2-0, now up to 12th in the table, only 2 points I should say behind Watford, who of course won that incredible run just before Christmas, but now got lost 3 games in a row, tough games admittedly, Spurs, Manchester City and now Southampton, but that is a big one for Southampton, whose form has been all over the place this season.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a massive, massive result. I think it's just probably going to turn following the FA Cup win, was it this weekend? You know, you look at the formation they set out, quite interesting, they play two left backs. They play both Matt Target and Ryan Bertrand on the left-hand side. Maybe that's to give them a little bit more solidity on that side, because they've been a bit leaky when it comes to conceding goals. Sadio Mane, again, had a very positive game, 5 shots on goal at the post. Another play, you know, every single... Mane, sorry, going to get killed by Mike Smalling again. Sorry, Mike, I apologise. Mane. Yeah, no, it's just, you know, his stock's rising and rising, isn't it? It's interesting that Shane Long's back in form as well. You know, Pele's been injured for a little bit, so it's good that the burden of goal scoring has gone off there. But you're seeing Jordi Klaassi come into the side. I think he's going to be a very, very big player in the second half of the season for them. A very decent defensive midfielder that is very, very good on the ball. Quite, you know, not very physical, but good on the ball. So it's interesting, because I do think Ronald Koeman does get away with it a little bit as a coach with Southampton. I feel that Southampton structure does sort of help him out a lot, but he's gone through this bad patch. And if he gets out on the other side, credit to him.
Jermaine Defoe hat-trick tonight.
Boom!
4-2.
Sunderland against
4-2
Swansea.
That
does leave the bottom. I mean, Chelsea are almost the least interesting thing this season in the Premier League. Ooh. That's the best thing about it, is Chelsea are actually really boring.
Big Sam Aladici working his magic over there. Big 3 points for Sunderland there. They're now 1 point behind Swansea.
They're still in 18th, of course. Equal points with Newcastle. And Newcastle just bought John Joe.
We'll come on to that, Lawrence. Don't you worry. I've got a little note here about John Joe. But yeah, a big win for Sunderland. And Jermaine Defoe with the hat-trick, as you said. He's proven a good buy, Lawrence, because a lot of people were sort of writing that one off when he arrived. But he's been popping up with quite a few goals this season. I think the stat doing rounds on Twitter is, you know, he's got more goals than the likes of Alexis Sanchez this season.
Yes. What the hell does that mean?
Has he still got it, mate?
Of course he saw something. You know, there were a lot of mistakes tonight from Swansea in their performance. You know, Jermaine Defoe returned from the period in exile from the league, essentially. And big, you
hanging
know,
out with Drake, wasn't he, in Toronto?
Yeah, running through the sixth. And now, you know, they could be up there as well. Although they're not, because they're down there in 18th.
Another good win for Stoke, Dave. 3-1 against Norwich, up to 7th now, 2 points behind United. Things are looking good for Stoke, I'd say. You know, some impressive performances over Christmas. Do you think they can be pushing for the top four this season, or do you think that sort of top 10 is maybe the limit for them?
Yeah, I think it's the top 10 is the limit, but we saw that they've had brilliant spells over Christmas. They beat United, obviously, but they've also been on the other side where they've not really clicked. Interesting, Nafolai got 2 assists today. Maybe this is going to kickstart his Stoke career. Sort of old school Stoke in a way. Joselu, Walters, and then an own goal. Really just ticking on. They've got a top goalkeeper. So they will definitely be top half, but I just don't think they've got the quality to quite get to that next level. I think they do still need a few more signings to break into that next bracket of teams. But Mark Hughes has done a fantastic job there. He's really good at sort of getting teams from the sort of, you know, your 14th to 15th, and then sort of getting them top half of the table. We've seen that before with Blackburn, for example.
Why are you being disrespectful, Dave? Why aren't you? Why didn't you say Mark Hughes, future Manchester United manager? Why are you being disrespectful, Dave?
Because personally, I
Dave, that's so disrespectful. I feel it's very disrespectful, Dave.
I can disrespect him if I want, Lawrence. I'm allowed to have my opinions.
Fair play.
Very disrespectful. How disrespectful that we don't speak of Mark. What a disrespectful piece of commentary.
Lawrence, I can't believe you being so disrespectful. You're Kenny right, Dalglish, what a manager.
What a manager. So disrespectful.
Manchester City, Lawrence, dropping points. 0-0 against Everton. We did mention it earlier. 22 shots, but the man of the match was Tim Howard. I saw a lot of City fans on Twitter sort of jumping to conclusions almost that Bellerin needs to go. You know, this is unacceptable. Big opportunity to make up ground in the title race, but, you know, not the end of the world. Or does it? Is it the end of the world? What does this mean for City?
A lot of people correlating Pellegrini needing to go with Pep Guardiola needing to come in.
Yeah.
The weird,
which looks like it's happening, of course, as we've seen.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of weird conversation. I mean, did Guardiola really need to make these statements at this point and then speak about how he's had a offer from a number of clubs? Yeah, no, but that's like letting the horse bolt and then going, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. And everyone's sort of going, well, the horse is halfway down the field, mate. It doesn't really matter, does it?
I'm with you.
I think everything else seems so calculating from him and sort of well thought out, and that was pretty poorly thought out. Even so, you'd imagine that actually City, I mean, Tim, you know, the only thing that Tim Howard didn't do tonight was save a penalty. And City did have a big penalty shout when John Stones brought down Raheem Sterling in the box.
Controversy.
Yes.
A lot of controversy over that one.
But I mean, speak controversial. Was Yaya Toure in the side tonight?
Wasn't he?
Dropped.
Let me check. Yaya Toure was in the... No, sorry, was in the side.
David Silva wasn't starting, right?
Yeah, David Silva didn't start. But all I'm saying is, guys, how can you have an ex-African player of the year who did
that.
And let's get on to that for a second, because it was ridiculous, some of the statements that he made in the press.
For the uninformed, Yaya Toure lost out on, I believe it's the African Player of the Year award to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and perhaps was not the most graceful loser, Lawrence.
Mm.
Well, he came out with some interesting statements afterwards. I believe he said it was a disgrace, was one of the least offensive ways that he put it. But yeah. Why would you react like that? Like, he knows.
Because he is quite rightly outraged, I think. I mean,
do you think?
Yeah, because he has done very, very well.
But so is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Not in 2015. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. It's 2015, right? You know, Aubameyang was absolutely ridiculous in 2015 in terms of scoring goals. You know, only Messi and Ronaldo scored more goals in Europe's top five leagues than Aubameyang. Yaya Toure had a very, very poor 2015, only directly involved in eight goals.
Undignified way to react. His exact words were, I think that's what makes the shame of Africa. To behave in this way is indecent. But what can we do? We Africans, we do not show that Africa is important to us. We give more priority to what's going on elsewhere than in our own continent. This is what is appalling.
Not really for me to agree or disagree with him. But
Yaya will look after himself, and I'll let Africa look after itself.
Brilliant. Because like before it needed
looking
after.
You should worry too much about Africa, because Africa will be the first to let you down.
Mm.
Like, what a ridiculous response.
I'll tell you what, Yaya needs to chill out, doesn't he?
Yeah. If you don't give him a cake or a bloody award, he loses his mind.
Sorry, Yaya, you weren't very good last year. Here's your second place prize.
I think it's slightly embarrassing, to be honest, and he should have the complete wrong way to react. Bit of dignity. But like you're saying, Dave, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had a great year. Played very well.
In the goals.
Congratulate him.
He deserves it, definitely. I think we should give him the front three championship of 2015 for coming into the scene.
Like any good Aubameyang, he can come back again. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other...
Can we just one... Fashion footballers' awards have fashion issues.
Yeah.
And
that team.
Before we come on to that, let's
want to throw myself out the window. That.
Let's discuss briefly. Aston Villa actually won a game. They beat Crystal Palace. That was on Tuesday. And as we mentioned, Bournemouth losing 3-1 to West Ham. Who are doing
well. Funny thing about that Villa game, sorry, just to jump in. Mika Richards went over to the fans, obviously, yeah. in the FA Cup and apologised. And then he got dropped the next game and they won.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Sorry.
Maybe though, Dave, he took such charge of the situation that he actually went, no, you're right. We should drop me for the next game.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he did. No, maybe he did. That would have been excellent. Well played, Mika.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That was the Premier League. That was the Premier League midweek games. In conclusion, great night, great week for Leicester. Premier League still all over the place and no one can defend. So it was entertaining, maybe not for Lawrence McKenna, but for everyone else. Let's very quickly talk about a few done deals in the transfer market.
Done deal.
Lawrence, Stephen Corker on
done
loan.
Deal.
Done deal.
6 months.
Done.
Four. 6 months. So we've got Stephen Corker. Good 6 months. Good interim.
Striker.
Hashtag Moneyball.
Good signing, though. Good interim signing, though.
Yeah, and he played solid for Liverpool against Arsenal towards came the end. And Liverpool came scored the goal front, when he was on the pitch.
He's so up front. They stuck him up.
is Stephen Corker actually, you know, the change that Liverpool needed to kickstart things in 2016, guys?
I mean, signing of the season.
I think it's too early at all to
what a corker of a signing.
Come I think on. We're fully justified in saying that. Dave Benick Afobe for Bournemouth.
Crazy. £10 million for a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Player that scored goals in the championship.
It's funny when I do it. It's actually just creepy when you guys do it. So,
what are you talking about?
Whoa, Dave's, bro.
Dave was fantastic.
Sure.
Lawrence McKenna, shut up.
Oh, good. Can someone cut that out for me? That's a good...
He has gone for
it. Dave, okay, but Afobe's a very good player at the championship level. Let's get back to the football and stop messing about, lads. You know, came from the Arsenal Youth Academy, sort of a quick forward, very, very good at getting the ball to feet. A little bit like the Championship Sergio Aguero, I'd say. Scored 9 goals this season. So I think it'll be a good signing for Bournemouth. They've been lacking that pace since the loss of Callum Wilson at the start of the season, where it really clicked with Bournemouth with Wilson up front. And they took a bit of time to get Josh King playing that position. Now they've got Afobe, they've got another option. Gary Goals, he's going to score them.
This Gary Goals plays for a lot of teams, doesn't he?
He does that. Gary gets around, doesn't he?
Lawrence, Jonjo Shelvey goes to Newcastle, £12 million. At first, I was a little bit surprised by this, but after the fact, it all sort of adds up. Swansea are desperate for a striker, £12 million in to sort of get that guy in. They obviously don't want to be relegated before the bonanza of money that's coming in next season. So it does sort of make sense. And in a way, he's a player who sort of is out of favour in a way. His performance in the FA Cup at the weekend was obviously slated by Swansea fans. His form has sort of gone off a cliff. Some talk that it's maybe the last chance for him to prove himself.
I think he's in a saloon, isn't he, Adam?
In many ways.
In many ways, he's in the last chance saloon.
Right? Well, do you believe that? You're in with that school of thought?
I think obviously he needs time to be able to prove his position at Newcastle, but I do think he's got a quality technique on him. I think a lot of people question his approach, and you know, the way that he approaches the squad game and the football, and his overall demeanour within football, I guess. And I think Newcastle would hope that Steve McLaren can write that. I think there's a lot of good feeling towards Jonjo Shelvey because, you know, he's been at a couple of clubs where he's done very memorable things. So, I hope he does well. And I think he's a good addition to their midfield in the sense of he's a figure and certainly a recognisable face that I think the fans can try and relate to.
I think he's the midfielder that are lacking, right? You know, against United, I thought both their midfielders were rubbish. But Tiote had absolute nightmare in front of the back four. And then Jack Colback, he's just not good enough for the Premier League. And I think someone like Jonjo Shelvey, someone that can distribute, someone that can gets the crowd up, has a crack at goal now and again. You know, against Oxford, he had a few shots from distance. I think that's something Newcastle need. They, when their fans are behind them, you see the lift that it gives the players, especially in that second half against United, gave them a massive lift and they started playing very, very well. If they get someone that can sort of a calming influence, you've got the likes of Mo Sissoko and Wijnaldum that are a little bit headless chicken-y when they're playing. They're very like, let's just get in there, let's play really quickly. Jonjo can sort of start getting that creative influence in there, slow it down, spin some passes together, and it probably will do very well for Steve McLaren and Newcastle, to be quite honest.
Before we get on to the talking point, I want to talk about Messi and his place in the pantheon of all-time greats, but we probably should do a little bit of Ballon d'Or chat before that, because, of course, as part of the gala, there was the FIFPro World 11 Awards, as you mentioned there, Dave. The team, you're not happy with the team. Is that what you're saying to me? You don't disagree?
I don't believe it.
Okay, let me just outline the team.
I just don't believe it. Who's making this team?
Goalkeeper.
I think it was voted. Was it voted?
It was voted. It's voted.
Okay. By everyone.
Players. Do they watch football? Do they watch
more than 20,000 professional footballers?
Consistent every 20, other game 000. Of the week. 20,000. Or they watch him on YouTube.
Well, I mean, the passion is coming through once again.
Sorry,
goalkeeper, Manuel Neuer. You can't disagree with that, surely.
No, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool.
Defenders, Thiago Silva, Sergio Ramos. Okay.
No.
Are you thinking the likes of cute?
Thiago Silva? Well, for what? For playing in Ligue 1? What did he do in a Champions League? Absolutely nothing. Gerard Piquet.
Bugger all, Dave.
Chiellini. Bonucci.
Marcello and Dani Alves.
Marcello! He was absolutely exposed in the Champions League. He was torn apart.
But he's not a terrible player, though. I mean, he's been a bit of a leading light in terms of
in terms of
the Real Madrid team, hasn't he?
You've got Jordi Alba, you've got David Alaba, two players that have been excellent in 2015 that have been better than Marcelo.
Dave, what about midfield? We've got Iniesta, we've got Paul Pogba, and
Paul Pogba.
That's not even the one that caused the stir. Luka Modric was the one that caused a bit of a stir. His inclusion over the likes of, say, Sergio Busquets.
But I think the Paul Pogba one's even worse. I think they're both as bad as each other.
He's absolutely ruined
in the Champions League semi-final as well. Carvajal had him absolutely, you know, running around him. He couldn't defend properly. Juventus had to make a tactical. They had to bring a substitute on because he was doing such a bad job. Well, these people just don't get it. Luka Modric, what's he done? He's done nothing.
How about the forwards? Neymar, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. Are you going to go off on this one?
That's all right, lad. I did all right, lad. The lads did well. Yeah.
I'd go off on Cristiano Ronaldo, mate. But whatever.
But to be fair, you know, Lawrence, Luis Suarez, should he be in the team?
Probably, yeah. Because he's a very, very good player this year. But he has to learn. You can't bite people years ago. And then pretend to be reformed. And not only that, but there were...
He's fighting bloody in the tunnel.
Fighting in the tunnel is a little bit worrying. Apparently, he sort of was shouting things at the Espanyol players, calling them filth and stuff.
Jesus.
I can imagine like Suarez being like standing in the tunnel with Busquets and Piqué, being like scrappy dude, you know, like with his fists going up.
Like one of those little terrier dogs that sort of when you're walking past, he's sort of like... Ruff, ruff. And you're sort of
what were your thoughts on the Puskás Award, Lawrence? So over 1.6 million votes cast, three nominees, one being Wendell Lira, who scored a pretty spectacular overhead kick. We also had Alessandro Florenzi's halfway line strike for Roma against Barcelona.
I did think Florenzi was
pretty
good.
Pretty exceptional goal. Also, Messi's solo effort against Athletic Bilbao, where he sort of mazed through about four or five players before slamming it into the bottom corner. That would have got my vote, to be honest. But
really?
that only got Because the other goals were spectacular, but the Messi goal had me on my feet.
Yeah, I'm just going to not even bother talking about that. Ridiculous.
But that was interesting. That was a public vote. 1.6 million votes cast. 46% going to Lira, 33 to Messi, and only 7% to Alessandro Firenze.
I just don't get it. I think I'm going to quit.
That's a public vote, though. That's the consensus.
What's the public thinking?
Lionel
Messi goal is a piece of individual brilliance.
I like a bit of team. Yeah, but I mean, Dave, I mean, there's another piece of individual brilliance in there and a little bit more team brilliance there.
Yeah, but I just think Lionel Messi should get that. That's just the goal of your lifetime, right?
Right.
I just don't get it. Today,
just don't get it. Shall we move on to the talking point?
Dave's disenchanted.
I think I might quit.
Okay.
So, Lionel Messi won his fifth Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
Incredible achievement, Lawrence. Can't argue with him being awarded the fifth.
No, you can't. No. And he's got some lovely boots to commemorate it as well.
That's
all white boots. They love the Adidas boots. Go to thefront3.com, hit the blog, and you can see a gallery of those new boots. It's up
fantastic.
As we record.
I love it. Dave, you're also in agreement that Lionel Messi had to win the Ballon d'Or this year.
Yeah, 100%. Best player in the world, wasn't he?
So obviously, incredible achievements. Mm-hmm. Fifth Ballon d'Or, three Champions League we're talking about now, seven league titles. There's a lot of talk about how, Lawrence, this has cemented his place as the greatest of all time. This is the crowning achievement. Never been done before.
Yeah. I think he's the greatest player of all time.
Wow. I mean, you've come out and you've
come out swinging.
You've come out swinging.
But the only reason I have is because he, you know, the only thing that he hasn't won, guys, is the World Cup, and he was in a World Cup final.
How big a hole do you think that World Cup is on his CV, though?
I mean, he said that he would trade all of his Ballon d'Ors for one World Cup. But I think it's going to be very difficult for people to break his records, all those kind of things. And I he's actually a fantastic... It's not like he is just a kind of a functional player. It's also the beauty that goes with him and the intangible... ish side, which is backed up by the stats. And it's also the fact he may also be playing in the greatest football team that we've seen to date.
Very true. Over the past decade as well.
Yeah.
What about the Premier League, Dave? Because a lot of people say, oh, Cristiano Ronaldo's done it in the Premier League. He's done it in La Liga. Messi, he's only done it in Barcelona, the best team in the world. He, of course, hasn't done it in a way when he's done it in Stoke. Does that really matter? Because he's proven himself against the very best Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, every other week in the Champions League.
Maybe he needs to join Stoke, right?
Kojan. He won't have to do
and Altovic.
Yeah. Does that prove anything? Say if, for example, in some crazy parallel world where, I guess, technically... He is joining Stoke, if you believe those theories. Does that mean anything? Joined Stoke and, you know, led them to the top four finish?
The biggest measure at the moment, like, you know, in terms of performance, is the Champions League. It's more than the World Cup. I think that it's just it's the tournament that's at the creme de la creme at the moment just because of the money in the game. And I feel that, you know, the amount of times, go back to the finals that he sort of won, the one against United was best player on the pitch in the first one. Best player on the pitch in the second one against Juventus was probably the best player on the pitch. That is massive. In the final of the World Cup, you know, that's the only sort of like sort of tarnishing of his career, you'd say. Well, he didn't have the best game against Germany, correct? Mm-hmm. But he carried them to there. He carried them to the final. He really did. We forget that his individual brilliance sort of got them there. And maybe he did run out a little bit of steam.
Yeah, but the point, yeah, exactly. The point there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, if you don't go all the way, then does that cap it off? And the only problem with most people is the Maradona-esque. I mean, you know, people seem to say, you know, he's not Maradona, or they seem to have a problem with him not being Maradona.
Yes,
but then I'd say Maradona. You know, Maradona had a different kind of career. He had a very different kind of career to Maradona. I mean, Messi's that clean living kind of, at least publicly. And I'm not implying anything about it. At least publicly, clean living guy, you know, hasn't done anything wrong.
And Maradona, you know, certainly wasn't.
Maradona was not that, and he was quite the opposite. But they both sort of, you know, there's a summary in both of them, and something that sums up something really good there.
I feel like the Maradona argument that, you know, he dragged almost single-handedly this average Argentina team to the World Cup. He dragged an average Napoli team to the next level. It feels like a harsh stick to beat Messi with, because he is in this incredible team, this generation of players at Barcelona. But you look at Maradona and his peak was so short. And you look at Messi, who's exactly. done it consistently in these incredible competitions, like, you know, the World Cup, as Dave says, there last year. Well, we're talking 2014 now. The Champions League every week, the Liga every week, and over such a period of time. Surely that means Messi is or has achieved a lot more than Maradona did, even though the World Cup's the peak of the game?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you look at the goals again. Maradona only scored over 20 goals twice in his career in Europe, whereas Lionel Messi has scored over 37 times. And in many of those seasons, he's gone over 50, 60 goals. So it's one of those things where I just think Lionel Messi, in terms of goal scoring, was a lot better than Maradona. I think the other thing, Messi's peaked for... How many years has Messi been in peak now for? Since he was about 23? He's now 28, so he's been peaking for 5 years.
I mean, even before that, he was still a fantastic player. It's not like he was a bad player and then suddenly got good.
There was that talk at the end of 2014 about how maybe injuries had taken their toll and maybe we'd seen the best of Messi. We've seen the absolute peak. But then in 2015, he came straight back and was obviously showed the sort of form that won him this Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, the point that goes with that is probably there that we thought that was the best that he could get.
I think that's the best thing about it, right? You know, he's evolved so much, you know, winger, false nine, now a wide playmaker that goes into the number 10 slot, that plays through balls, that plays 1-2, scores goals. What's he going to do next? You know, he's probably going to become a number 10 that sort of the team will be about, built around defending, and he'll, you know, play on the counter-attack, more of an on-gaunt, like an old-school Raquel May type player that just sits there, they get the ball to him and he'll make things happen. I don't feel Messi's going to lose a lot with his like loss of pace, because I think his agility is always going to be there. You know, you look at the likes of Ronaldinho, Kaká, they were very, 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 very good at beating their man one-on-one when they had that yard of pace. And as soon as that pace went, we saw a massive decline of the player. I just don't think that with Lionel Messi, because technically, you know, he's that good. Technically, he can find a pass. Technically, he can, you know, his shooting ability is ridiculous. Just one of those things where I just can't see when he's going to fall. And if he stays at Barcelona, he stays, you know, in living, you know, with his wife, a very quiet sort of lifestyle where he does just live to play football. Just going to be so interesting. I don't know if we're ever going to see anyone like that, right? You know, the player that's sort of maybe has a little bit of, you know, social difficulty in a way. You know, you see the videos of him cycling around his garden on his kid's scooter, a little bit odd, but that's where you get the brilliance of people, right? They may be a little bit lacking somewhere, but then on the football pitch, he's amazing. And I think we just, like, I need to watch Barcelona more. I think all the listeners need to watch Barcelona more. You two need to watch more Barcelona, just so we can take in his brilliance.
We've all got lives, Dave.
Yeah. Well, right, I'll watch them more. Jeez. obviously, Lauren, she can't talk about Lionel Messi without talking about Ronaldo. It seems to...
You can,
but we won't. It seems to have almost, for a lot of people, put this debate to bed almost, that, you know, although Ronaldo is one of the greatest of all time, Messi is perhaps the greatest. You know, obviously, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible now, for Ronaldo to match Lionel Messi's Ballon d'Or haul. You can debate about how much the Ballon d'Or means. It obviously means a lot to Ronaldo himself. Where for you does Ronaldo place against the likes of Maradona, Messi, Pele?
A very different kind of
player. Is he in the conversation?
He looks a lot more cognizant of what he's doing, if that makes sense. So he looks a lot more conscious of it. Whereas the other guys look a little bit more like it's just sort of flowing out. So they sort of have this movement with it. His look looks more constructed. But I feel like we're having the same conversation a few years ago, and this has been going on for such a long time now. To me, it doesn't really matter if he's the best player of all time, if any of them are the best players of all time. They're wonderful footballers. And I think the thing that maybe lets Ronaldo down is he made the wrong career decision. He went to Real Madrid.
That's very interesting point, because I've heard Dave say that many a time before, that perhaps his career has actually been held back by making that dream move.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's like you sort of have a player that develops, well, you go to a club that develops you so much in a way, you know, like similar to what Barcelona did for Lionel Messi, you know, with the hormones, bringing him over, taking care of his family and so forth. Ronaldo was made at Manchester United. And I feel if he'd stayed at Manchester United, the accolades that he would have won, the trophies he would have won would have been a lot more, because the team would have been built around Ronaldo and he would have been the main man. His ego would have been massaged to enough of an extent where he still would have had this Ferguson father figure there that would have kept him grounded. I feel like this move to Real Madrid just inflated his ego so, so big, and he stopped doing the things that made Ronaldo so good at Manchester United, picking the ball up deep, running at players. He started developing into a, you know, a goal scorer, a poaching winger that sort of gets into the penalty area. Before, it was all about getting the ball to Ronaldo, then Ronaldo goes, and it's quite interesting to see his career develop. Whether that would have happened at Manchester United, whether he would have, his progression would have gone the same way, I feel it wouldn't have done. I feel he still would have played on the wing for Manchester United, not been, you know, this whole, on a pedestal in a way.
It's interesting that,
goals, right? It's just, I think that it's become more about the personal accolades, and he's forgotten how to play in a team.
I think we're applying our analysis of an individual as a group. I think the sometimes we also get lost in that. So the other day when we were talking about who's the greatest player of all time, people sort of spoke about he's an ego, he's got an arrogance, all these kind of things. I just feel like that it almost misses the point a little bit with what Ronaldo has actually achieved, which is to, like I've said a lot of times, an almost Jordan-esque kind of career where he's very much worked very hard to get to where he is. I'm not saying that Messi hasn't, but I feel like the implied nature of what he's doing, which is that it all comes naturally to him, and then suddenly, as if he takes it very lightly, it is a bit unfair on him.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I don't know. Like, obviously, he has put this massive work in, but you know, Ronaldo, the progression of Ronaldo from say 2004 to 2006, you'd say, when he started really kicking on, scoring goals and so forth. I don't know if we saw that next jump up. Obviously, it's a lot. It's 20 times harder to go from a very skinny, silky winger to being a goal-scoring machine. Like, where do you go next? Whereas I think that's where Lionel Messi's done a lot better, is he's progressed in a way where he's got better. Do you see what I mean? Like, the Ronaldo curve seems to be like it's peaked and it's potentially not going over the edge, but it's just flatlined. Whereas Messi's had like a stag, like got up and then it's potentially flatlined for a bit, then it's gone up again and then gone up again.
What is really interesting is that this could be the last generation where we'll see a footballer like this. So, you know, the generation with you know, Maradona, Pele, those kind of guys, that was the last generation we could see a footballer like that. This is the last generation we can see a footballer like this. And I wonder what the next generation's construction of a footballer is going to be like.
Do you think that's the difficulty in comparing, you know, Messi, Ronaldo, who obviously, as Dave said, we get to see week in, week out. Is it? Can we really compare them with that different generation? You know, we're talking about Maradona, before him Pele, the likes of, you know, Beckenbauer, maybe Di Stefano.
Relatively compare, yes. But I think that, you know, there's very few people who kind of put a scale together to actually sort of compare these guys. Because you almost need to add, we've spoken about this on the podcast before, add football inflation, don't you?
Yep. Is it even possible in the fact that, you know, we're all 20-something guys, we never watched Pele live, obviously, unless you've hopped in your time travel machine. Maradona as well, we can't really, it's difficult to compare them. The only thing we seem to be able to compare them on is obviously the stats and their honours and what they achieved in the game. Necessarily on the nuance of them actually on the pitch.
But a wonderful touch, those kind of things. I mean, you know, those... But it's such fine lines as to how you construct that as a career. Because, you know, there are so many players with a good touch. Hatem Ben Arfa has got an incredible touch. You know, there's other players out there with... If they were surrounded...
I just like the fact he was mentioned in a general chat about all-time greatest. Not that you're saying he is, it's just, I like it.
I mean, he's one of the all-time greatest could have been, you know?
Yeah. Ooh.
Probably is one of the all-time greatest could have been. I mean, you look at that.
That is a discussion for another time.
Well, yeah, it is, but then he also sort of belongs in this conversation a little bit, because I think he, you know, it shows how well Ronaldo and Messi have done as well. You know, there's a full scale of footballer there. And Messi and Ronaldo sit at the on this scale, the top.
What about Pele, Dave? Obviously, I have to give him a mention. Reportedly scored, you know, 1,200 odd goals in his career. 3 World Cups, of course, but maybe never did it at the highest stage in club football.
Yeah, I think that was the thing, wasn't it? At Santos, obviously. They're really interesting, though. You know, that Santos team used to tour the world playing football. Imagine how cool that would have been in the sort of like the 60s. That would have been brilliant.
But going back to the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, it's such a cool like thought that, like, yeah, they that Santos would come over to England and play, have a kickabout at Leicester City.
I feel like Florentino Perez should do that.
Yeah, he should do, shouldn't he? Like take Real Madrid to the next level, just tour in the world.
No, I just mean Florentino Perez should just fuck off and tour the world.
That's a bad point. Yeah. I think, again, Pelé was another player that was, you know, brilliant, scored, you know, youngest player ever to score a hat-trick at the World Cup, 17 years old in a semi-final. And then he got the best player in the 1970 World Cup. So his longevity was probably similar to Messi, Ronaldo in a way, you know, more so than of, you'd say, Maradona, that could have peaked a bit. But it's just, again, that you've got to look, go back and watch him. Really interesting that he played, obviously, with a heavier ball, with not the same type of boots and not very good conditions. Yeah, he still had that ability to, the goal that obviously everyone knows chipped over the head in the volley. It's just incredible. It's really incredible that players can do that with the ball. It'd just be really good to see these players at the same time, right? You know,
yeah.
Messi go back there, they come here.
That's what I think is interesting.
We need one of the listeners to build a time machine. Then we can go and do this, right?
Guys, let's all get together. Let's crowdfund a time machine.
I feel like it's possible.
Feasible. So I think obviously we're all biased. Just seeing as, you know, we watch Messi week in, week out, but I assume we're all on the same page. Messi, for us, is the greatest. And it's a privilege to watch him every single week.
So who's going to agree with us? And who are people putting forward as the greatest of the past? And also,
yes,
the greatest of the next generation.
Oh, that's great. Great discussion. Do you think, just to cap it off then, do you think, we talked about there about how Messi may be at the peak, but do you think, obviously Ronaldo's 30, could be leaving Real Madrid this summer, looking likely to pave way for the next generation. Messi, though, obviously going to stay at Barcelona, we assume.
Yeah.
Probably, maybe got another 2-3 years left in him at the peak, you would hope.
I reckon it'll be longer. We see
longer.
Yeah, I reckon it'll be longer. I reckon he'll be 35 and he'll still be incredible.
Jeez. And do you think he's nailed on for the Ballon d'Or next year, or do you think Neymar now, the likes of Gareth Bale maybe, could get closer?
Nah, it's Messi again, mate.
Messi again. You heard it here first.
Barring any injuries.
I do also think, though, what Messi can do for his next generation, which is something that maybe Ronaldo and those other guys haven't quite gotten through yet. And I think, again, this is probably why this is that part of this generation of footballers is sort of pass on that legacy in a sense, or part, you know, again, Michael Jordan did that very well in the NBA, sort of like, you know, pretending that, you know, he was the elder statesman almost. And the NBA managed that very well. I don't feel like football manages aging so well. They don't make it possible to almost age elegantly sometimes. It's quite brutal. And I understand it's the same in other sports, but, you know, when you look at the tour that Kobe Bryant's on at the moment in America, and basically just going around playing a load of, you know, games where he gets cheered every time, I wonder what's going to happen come the end of Ronaldo and Messi's careers. And what their legacy is going to be. What's the legacy? That's a good question, actually. Mm. What's the legacy of Ronaldo? And what's the legacy of Messi?
It's going to be fascinating to see. I think it's going to be shaped by a lot of what happens in the next 2 years or so. When Ronaldo moves on, what he can achieve elsewhere, and what if Messi can still keep up this incredible achievements with Barcelona. But we shall see. Anyway, guys, let us know what you think on Twitter at the Front Three. And we'd love to hear your suggestions, your thoughts, your questions.
We always pose more questions than we answer. I just feel like this podcast is just a series of us going,
but I like it. I want people to get in touch and tell us.
What if we're visionaries. Cats can play football?
Well, that's a question for the viewers, isn't it? Or the listeners. Or
which need to get in the question. Would you most like to see?
Play football, didn't you say?
Yeah.
Which cat would poll be the right best now.
Of football is what I want to know. Which cat would be the best? The top hat, the cap, you know.
Also, who'd be the top cat? Which footballer is which animal?
Spirit animal.
We've done spirit animals, but I'm saying, like, which footballer would literally be which animal, you know?
Did we do which footballer is your spirit animal? Have we already done that?
And we did do that, and I said Javi Alonso.
My memory is terrible.
Dave anyway, said, listen, for some weird reason, John Matip. I don't know why.
I did not say Joel Matip.
Such a weird answer, Dave. Why would you say Joel Matip?
To be honest,
the player that everyone's only seen like 2 seconds of on YouTube, but yet he's going to be the next best thing at the centre back of Liverpool.
My spirit animal is Jonjo Shelvey. I've decided as of now.
Fucking journeyman who never quite achieves where he goes.
on that note,
I don't think Jonjo Shelvey's got 500,000 subs, mate.
Saturday,
oh,
Saturday, guys, is the 50th front three.
Bloody hell.
Q&A bonanza, Q&A special.
Come celebrate with us.
Come celebrate the 50th episode. Send us your questions. Send us your thoughts. Send us your reviews on iTunes. That'll be a lovely 50th episode present. Yes,
please, if you haven't.
We did have a great review last week from I should give a props to Robert593. Thank you for your great review on iTunes. Simply amazing, he said. The opening sentence was, "This is undoubtedly the best football podcast ever."
Brilliant.
Which is big words. But thank you very much, Robert, for your kind words. If you want to leave us an iTunes review, that would be much appreciated. Give us a little rating as well. Make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. Of course, the 50th episode is the main one you don't want to miss. Until then, Lawrence, the good people can find you where?
What a neat transition. So you never miss an episode. Of course, the 50th episode is the one you really don't want to miss.
Yeah, it's late. It's half 11.
It is half 11. No, you're right.
Where can the good people find you?
You can find me on the Football Republic. You can also find me at front3.com. You can find me on Twitter at Lozcast, LOZCAST.
And Dave, if people want to see you review every Manchester United game, what YouTube channel would they go to?
Oh, it is brilliant.
Well, Anna Thomas with the greatest suggestion of all time, the GOAT suggestion. Dave Talks.
Hyperbole.
It's been rebranded. Dave Talks. And it is available on thefront3.com on the blog. I'm going to be posting all of them up there if you want to stay in touch.
How many subs do you have, Dave? How many subs do you have?
I think it's like 2,400. So thanks for all the
subs. That's pretty good. For a little channel. That's really
fantastic,
good.
Dave. Yeah. Well done.
And also, I have downloaded Premiere, so the quality of the production should improve.
Brilliant. That's a business reference there that very few people are going to get, but fantastic, Dave. Thank you.
Dave, did you call it Dave Talks, keep it open-ended? So, it might be Dave Talks movies 1 week.
Dave Talks food.
Can you do Dave Talks ... I think that would work.
Oh, I like it a lot.
Mystery. So, what is he going to talk about?
Yeah.
Dave Talks. And it's a little bit like Dear Deirdre. Oh, Dear Dave would be a very good format.
Oh, my God. That'd be very funny.
let's save that for the Front Freeze YouTube channel. On that note, thank you very much for listening.
We'll see you after that.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on Saturday.
Adam, where do they find you?
Oh, good question. Oh, you can find it at Adam Talks. Oh,
no. Adam Talks. The rival.
Dear Adam.
No, the Football Republic. Or Adam Baldwin on Twitter. Please come and say.
What was the Football Republic before it was a republic?
It was just a plot of land, Dave.
If it's anything like Star Wars, it was an empire. The football empire.
But it will become that.
It depends which way you look at it.
Yeah. It's late. Adam's not up for jokes now. Time to end the podcast, everyone.
My brain is struggling to process the hilarity going my way.
If a land is not a republic, what is it? Oh, I can't be fucked. See you later, guys.
Dave, we've shut up. You love it.
Goodbye. See you on Saturday. Bye.
Bye.
I am going to bed.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.